We have our microphones back. I hope this should be a little bit clearer, and also means we ought to be able to have a fair discussion working through the two rooms. So I've got my camera's helper who's going to go over the far side. Go that side? That side of the room. I'll do the ones near me. Before I do, just to explain how the microphones work, please do use them because it's not the best shape for discussion. Hopefully we are aware of that. And you may be able to hear yourself, but not everybody else. So bear that in mind, please use them, don't just come around. They're directional. So if you do that, it does no good at all. Okay? Please direct them towards your mouth, otherwise it won't work. Okay? On that, is there any comments or questions or things you want to say? Do you want to go to the nearer guy first and then the chap behind you? Well, I know this goes fairly soon.
With a couple of questions. One was about supercooling and whether that created a different structure. And the other question was about, in water, how long this structure that you observed lasted for. It must be picoseconds.
Supercooling, you're probably all familiar with supercooling. If I cool a liquid down slowly, then unless I have some muck in that liquid, it will tend not to crystallise at the melting point. It will tend to always go to a low temperature. That's partly a dynamic restriction. The liquid molecules, the molecules of the liquid, for example, have to find the crystalline structure, and that's an entropically expensive thing to do. Don't worry about the word, but it's difficult to do. And so it can take quite a long time for the liquid to find its crystal structure. What happens to the liquid structure as you cool it down is it just becomes more and more ideal. You get rid of a lot of the defects that you get in a higher temperature. And so the current model of this ideal model I gave you here of a liquid is really the ideal model of a supercooled liquid. Okay? It becomes more and more. The forms become more and more rigid, and it's more like that sort of model I got there rather than one at high temperature where you find some of your forms were broken and they were slightly different coordinations. Lifetimes is interesting. About 2 picoseconds is the characteristic time. This time is actually quite short compared to what you would expect for the strength of those bonds. You'd expect them to be longer lived. And so that process is not complete bond breaking, it's due to defect processes which are helping the molecules to change neighbours. But about 2 picoseconds is a reasonable sort of time period. Does that make sense? Okay. So you should remember this, that if you took a picture of a water structure at time zero, and then you took it at time zero plus a few picoseconds, you wouldn't be able to recognise that the previous structure would have changed, but still be statistically the same sort of structure as you had before. But the basic units, the particular local structures, would have broken down and reformed. And this is one problem, of course, that we have with ideas of turbidity, for example, or ideas of memory of water. Okay, because thermodynamics tells you that these structures must melt and reform very, very quickly, and that unless there's something in there to keep a memory, then it ain't going to be there. That said, there was a time in my career when I've actually begun to believe in the memory of water. When on one of these ice phases, we couldn't actually make ice 3 by going through the phase diagram in the right way. And we tried all sorts of ways of doing this, including coming in from the crystal. Perhaps I'll show you the...
You're going forward or back?
I'm going back to the phase diagram.
ask you to stay here a bit, just so that these guys...
Yes, I'm sorry. Thanks. I'm going back to this phase diagram here. Okay. And ICE3, you see, is a very small region between the liquid and ICE2, up and down, and between 1H and 5 across. We were trying to make ICE3, and we went in from ICE1H into ICE2, and up into ICE3, and couldn't find it, and it melted. So we kept trying this. We came in from 1H straight into 3 at the right temperature, and it just stayed as ICE1H. And in the end, we said, well, look, there's a phase boundary with the liquid between 3 and the liquid. So if I come from the liquid side, it must crystallize into ICE3. And it didn't, it crystallized into ICE2. And this was obviously very frustrating, particularly PhD students who, you know, you find that time, you can't play these games for too long. And what actually was happening was that to create the pressure, there are several ways of creating the pressure to form these structures. And one of these is to use a gas, an inert gas as the medium. We're using argon. We're using helium. All right? We're using helium because we knew that helium didn't form these cage structures with water. I've got one of these here. Okay, argon, for example, which is a nice pressure medium, you can get argon in a cage like this. And so we avoided using argon and used helium. And when we eventually solved this problem, we solved the problem by stopping using a gas as a pressure medium and essentially just use a piston. And we got ICE3. And the reason we were getting ICE2 all the time was that here's ICE2. The helium was going into these channels and stabilising the ICE2 structure. And so we got a nice paper in Nature saying this is the first helium hydrate. But you can see, if we're going around the phase diagram all these times trying to get this structure, we start here with ICE2 and we melt it. And we come back and we get ICE2. We think, well, it must have remembered it was ICE2. Okay. But of course it hadn't, it just as the helium was there, was mucking things up.
So actually, technically, you didn't believe in water memory, you believed in ice memory, which isn't quite the same thing as liquid water memory.
but you see, the hypothesis is that the liquid retains some memory of the crystal structure it's just come from. Okay. Anyway, it didn't. It was just a human.
Can we go to him and then over in the corner? You have to wait one.
How likely, anthropically speaking, some people think we may live in a rather strange universe that lets life evolve. Is a substance with
can you use the mic? They can't hear next door.
Is a substance with so many different solid phases very improbable, or is it just, you know, it happens to be a common substance? If you looked hard, you would find other liquids that have a similar choice of things to freeze to.
There are other materials which have a large number of crystalline phases. And going to slides, you know, a whole backup of slides here, which I have no intention of going through, but just there to show you. There are quite a number of systems which have this tetrahedral bonding. And I said one is silica. Silica has an awful lot of phases, even as pure silica, several phases of pure silica. In fact, some of the early work that was done on water by my old boss, Bernal, used silica as an analogue to think of how water might form other ice phases. Silicon and germanium, again, they're tetrahedral type structures, and they have a number of different phases. Not necessarily as many as ice, as the chemistry is different, but still quite a large number.
Thank you. And do you find all these different forms of ice in nature? Have people looked for them, like deep down under Antarctica, for instance, you presume you get the right pressure and temperature?
none of those temperature and pressure conditions you need for those ice phases do not exist on Earth as far as we know. You can go right down to the bottom of the ice cap and the pressure is not high enough. They may exist on other planets or moons of other planets. In fact, one of the nice things about this work is that some of these phases may not have ever been seen before. There may not have been natural conditions which actually existed for these things to form. So it's rather nice to be able to think, well, we were the first people to plug together these water molecules in this particular way. But you know, on Earth, no, we don't think there's a chance of any... We don't think the pressure's high enough to do this.
A very good third one. You made a very convincing story why ice should become more compact than when it melts, because once it doesn't have to keep the crystal structure, it's got more choice. Why doesn't everything then, when it melts, at least just above its melting point, tend to get a more compact structure when it's got more choice, when it doesn't have to form a crystal?
Other systems that do the same sort of thing are these things, like silicon. They do the same sort of thing because they've got that same.
But doesn't everything have more choice when it melts and doesn't?
No, because if you take a simple crystal. I've got two extremes. I've got this tetrahedral structure, which is not very dense in the crystal, and I've got a spherical structure, spherical atoms or something spherical atoms, which are very dense in the crystal. And if I force that system to become disordered, I cannot make a disordered structure with the same density as that crystal structure. It just ain't possible. The density of that structure is, in terms of space filling, is about 74%. The ice density is about 50%. The density of that liquid, the densest packing I can get in a non-crystalline form of spheres, is 63%. Okay, there is just no way I can get a higher density by taking off the crystalline constraint. It always has to be a lower density. But with the ice case, because the ice is a lower density to start with, and there is a possibility of forming a higher density structure, then it can collapse into a higher density structure. Does that help?
Yes, indeed. Thank you very much.
Can I just check, would it be fair to say that if you take Philip Ball's idea of hands holding feet,
yeah.
Most other things when they make crystals are much more like bodies next to bodies.
Yes. Absolutely.
Hands right up to armpits kind of thing. So water is holding other molecules.
It's holding other molecules apart because of this angle between the molecules, between the arms, if you like. There's that space there that you can't fill without bending in like that or by another one coming in.
Can we go over to that side and then come back around through?
Can you hear me over here? Share it by.
What you just said kind of leads into my question. So, am I correct in assuming that what the temperature drop does is it makes the angle rigid and that's why it forms a crystal? I mean, I'm having difficulty when it's liquid, the angles can vary and they're more flexible. But when the temperature drops, is it the angles that solidify, which makes it go into a crystal? No matter how much you squish it, it can go in between, it can go in the spaces, but it still maintains the same angle?
Then, when you go into the crystal, it has to turn into a crystal, which is the crystal, i.e. it's got this repeating pattern in it. And to have that repeating pattern, that's atmospheric pressure, it has to have that open structure. Okay? If it was a high pressure, then it would have a different structure. But because if you think in the liquid, then I can have smaller rings than six, which occupy less volume.
Okay.
But my crystal requires me to have rings of six, then it has to have a lower density and higher volume.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yep.
towards the middle. Yep.
two related questions about life underwater. First of all, life underwater in rivers and then deep, deep in the oceans. As far as the rivers is concerned, surely it's a very good thing that the water has maximum density at 4 degrees, because even when the ice gets thicker and thicker and thicker, right down the bottom, there'll always be a thin layer of 4 degrees for the fish swimming.
Absolutely.
I've answered that correctly. So it's obviously very good for fish.
Yes.
And then what about the temperature in the deep, deep oceans with the extra pressure? What happens there? Do you know? If you're really down there, it obviously won't ever freeze down there. But it's only when it's above 4 degrees or below 4 degrees. There's an extra pressure. I mean, deep sea creatures must be incredibly resistant to pressure.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
How they ever survive down there, but with these bathyscapes and so on, they can see an incredible amount of life. And yet, not being squashed flat. But presumably the temperature is, again, something below 4 degrees.
But isn't water helping there as well because of its very strong incompressibility of liquid? I mean, liquids aren't really compressible anyway.
Yeah.
Water's particularly good as long as you've equalised the pressure inside and out. So the fish that swim in the deep sea trenches, don't they have equal pressure inside and outside their body, can't they? So they don't feel the pressure. They would if they came up to the surface.
If they come to the surface, then they have problems.
Yeah,
because they used to be down there.
But as far as the temperature is concerned, you wouldn't be able to hazard a guess as whether it's above or below 4 degrees. It must be pretty cold. Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know.
I think
the smokers.
Salty.
It's salty.
It's salty.
True.
Oh, yeah. And silver, didn't it?
Yeah.
And they can sort of run it.
And of course, it's. But I mean, even under the ice cap, you know, it's. In the poles, it's not ice all the way down, is it? In the sea. So it's above freezing. I don't know what the temperature is like
down. The salts and the pressure lower the melting point of water.
Yeah, about a few degrees. Yeah.
Wouldn't there be the heat from the ground from the earth?
Well, yeah. It's not a. It's not a simple. You could say, well, what's the pressure down there, and therefore, what expect the temperature be down there? That pressure. But it's more complicated than that, as you're suggesting, I suspect.
Yeah. There are volcanic vents as well. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I'm sorry, it wasn't a very satisfactory answer. But, yeah.
Somebody at the back of the room, can you reach to the back there? Who's that? No? Somebody else? Go to the gentleman in the grey there and we'll come forward there.
Okay. You're being very quiet over here.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm relying on you to keep your eyes open.
A very simple question.
These are the ones I get.
What about heavy water?
Yes, what about heavy water?
Does that have the same
yes.
anomalies?
Yes, it does, only they're shifted. I should come clean and say most of the experimental work that we do on water is done on heavy water.
Oh.
Or mixtures of heavy and light water. The reason being that if I'm doing... if I'm doing a scattering experiment with a structure, then if I use X-rays, then the hydrogen is a very weak scatterer. So I get a very, very poor signal from the hydrogens. If I use neutrons, then if I use heavy water, then I get a very strong scattering from the deuteron. And there are other tricks I can play because the hydrogen scattering is also strong, but it's also negative, if you like. It's out of phase from that of the deuteron. So I can play games, and I can have a certain mixture of H2O and heavy water, where I don't see the hydrogens at all, but they're essentially invisible. So I can play all sorts of lovely tricks like this, which is a great tool for a lot of this kind of work. But the H2O and the D2O phase diagrams are essentially the same, but there's some shifting in actually where these lines are between the different phases. All the work we've done on these high pressure ices, apart from ordinary hexagonal ice, have been done on the deuterated form. But we're pretty happy about those being the same structures because the densities are essentially what we'd expect them to be for for the heavy water phase compared to the light water phase. Where we've actually looked at the phase diagram, you can work out the phase diagram for H2O and B2O, and you find it's basically the same. So it's pretty good that they're the same structures. Does that answer it?
Yeah, okay,
thanks,
Trevor.
Okay, we'll come over here.
There's one over here.
And then we'll come to the back.
Two over here.
Yeah.
They've been
coming to you shortly.
They've been shamed into asking a question.
What about hydrogen sulfide? Because oxygen and sulfur are on the same group in the periodic table, but H2S is.
Hydrogen sulfide.
Hydrogen sulfide. And how does hydrogen sulfide differ?
The interactions are different. The sulfur is a mess in terms of. You're a chemist, aren't you?
The sulfur doesn't hydrogen bond properly.
It's a very
so
weak
it
hydrogen.
It doesn't make the same interactions. If you like, it's as if its hands are greasy. So when it tries to cling on somebody else's foot, it doesn't work. It doesn't have the same properties.
The melting and boiling points of H2S are normal, aren't they, in essence?
Yeah.
The reason we haven't gone into this, why water is thought to be odd is because. If it were like H2S or other hydrides, you would expect it to be a vapor under atmospheric conditions. But because of the way in which the molecules interact through this hydrogen bonding mechanism, then it means that they stick together more easily than they do in H2S.
The lone pair.
The lone pair is a nice simple picture which. Until a few years ago, was thought to be reasonable. If you do some proper quantum mechanics on that, you find it's actually only a single lobe of negative charge. But there's still enough space for the hydrogens to...
But then ammonia has...
Ammonia...
In lone pairs.
Has, that's right. And ammonia is a liquid, isn't it?
And it's got hydrogens.
It's got hydrogens, but it's imbalanced. HF... And ammonia, both have weak hydrogen bonding. But ammonia has got three protons, and it's got one bit of negative charge at the back. So if you try to make liquid ammonia, you can make liquid ammonia, but you're not going to get, there's not enough space behind the back side of the ammonia molecule to stick three hydrogens. Mm-hmm. All right? So it's an unbalanced structure, if you like, whereas the water's balanced. It's got 2 plus 2. Ammonia is 3 plus 1. HF is a chain. Okay? Hydrogen fluoride.
Ammonia has quite a short liquid range, doesn't it? So it does boil much more easily than water would.
I don't know. Good. If you say so, I'm sure it's true, yes. That's right. So there are other hydrogen bonding liquids, but I don't know of one which has this particular kind of unique... This particular kind of balanced geometry.
Yeah.
Okay?
Okay, I'm going to come to the middle here, then into the room, and then we'll come back.
Could you say anything about the viscosity of water compared to other liquids? And does all this structure that you've been talking about have some influence on it?
Yes.
Is everybody happy with viscosity?
How glutinous it is, how sticky it is. Yes, because the interactions are stronger than they would be in a simple liquid. And the viscosity behaves anomalously with pressure for the same sorts of reasons that I've been talking about here fundamentally. But I'm not sure I can be any more precise than that. Okay?
I'm going to go next to you first.
Various things have been said about, for example, deep in the ocean, somebody put in the salinity of it, and then you've talked about the mixing of heavy water and water. It made me start thinking about the purity, and also the thing about memory, if you like. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you believe in those things, the memory could be in the impurity rather than the water itself. So how pure is the water that you deal with? How do you get... pure water?
By taking out the stuff that shouldn't be there. which can be difficult. it's easier for the deuterated stuff because of the way that's made by multiple distillation.
You do that with
water. And there are standard techniques of making pretty pure water. And if there's only, as far as the kind of work that we're doing here is concerned, we could actually put up with quite impure water. In fact, some of the ice phases, some of those ice phases I mentioned, are not, they're metastable phases. And you have to find clever ways of making them. And some clever ways of making them are putting small amounts of impurity. And that impurity isn't as a template. It's to avoid supercooling. As I cool water down, it becomes, well, that's going into the problems.
No, probably better not visit this one.
But okay, the water I deal with is perfectly adequate for my conditions. All right.
So it doesn't need to be too pure.
Well, I mean, my water is 99.99%. Okay, that's not a problem. And if you, the detail is 99.9999%, and the small bit that isn't, that's something else. If I'm working with other liquids, I have to be a little more careful. No, that's okay. I think the purity is adequate. I can demonstrate that by my phase diagram. I get my eyes forming at the right concentration test. And if I have massive impurities which prevent it, then it's going to be interesting.
So is it fair to say that you can calculate a theoretical phase diagram and then attempt to prove it?
No, I can't calculate a theoretical phase
diagram. But you can watch it.
Other people have calculated theoretical phase diagrams based upon certain models of the water-water interaction. But those models are imperfect. But there are one or two models which basically reproduce the topography of that phase diagram, even if they don't get the transition to the right temperature and pressures. But no, that's an experimental phase diagram called D2O.
But I guess the point still comes around, somebody must have then had reasonably pure D2O or H2O, whatever they're using, in order to construct that, surely.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you know whether you could compare it to yours and see if
it takes a lot of impurity to make significant changes to that diagram.
I think some time ago there was an African schoolboy who asked the question.
Oh, why does it?
Yeah, what's the answer?
Can you repeat the question?
It was basically that warm water is quicker to boil ice than cold water.
Quicker than cold water. I don't know. I'm no expert on that. There are various theories, I think. Anybody got any views on that?
Yes.
Yes?
Because the molecules are so spaced apart that they're tending towards a giant structure.
Because what?
Because they're
hot.
Because they're hot, they are spread out and they're nearer to the giant structure of ice than they would be in a fluid state of water.
So they don't need to move apart before they connect the...
They've already moved apart so that they're sort of spaced to lock into that.
You're bypassing 4 degrees centigrade extra density.
Well, you must be going through it rapidly. I mean, has the effect been actually demonstrated that it does actually freeze more quickly? It does. Okay. But I don't know the answer.
Just going to stay this side.
I wanted to ask about surface tension. Mm-hmm. You've got a liquid and you've got a capillary tube or a narrow tube and you've got your water. Are you not, you've got the liquid at the top of the capillary tube in a particular structure, which is not an average structure.
Yeah, the structure of the surface is slightly different, yes. It has to be, because it's not three-dimensional, it's a two-dimensional structure. So the water molecules have to raise themselves in such a way that I get a reasonably flat surface. So there's a perturbation of the structure of any interface, of any liquid. There are arguments about what the nature of the structure is. Okay? Because it's not easy to actually measure. It's not a bolt, it's only you're trying to measure the structure of a very, very thin layer. And so you don't have a lot of molecules to play with to measure that structure. But you can certainly do reasonable computer calculations on what the structure's like at the surface, and you will tend to find that the molecules arrange themselves in such a way as to try to satisfy all their major hydrogen bonding constraints within the surface. Alright? So the hydrogens you tend to find will tend to be in the surface rather than sticking out with nothing to satisfy them. And you can build defective structures which do that.
Okay, let's come back to the side.
What are the limiting factors on the multiplication of place phases? Is it going indefinitely?
How long is your career?
Mine's finished. So therefore the ice phase diagram is finished, yeah. There's always a possibility that there's another structure there that nobody's found. And you know, we can see that from the structures we've found in the last 10-15 years. Ice 12, for example, was a total surprise. Because no one suspected it. And it's a very strange structure. It breaks a rule of networks that some people thought was unbreakable. So that was quite useful to tell the theoreticians they got it wrong. And some structures have been proposed on the basis of computer calculations that have not been found experimentally. There's a bit of an industry in ice phases for the theoreticians. They want to predict another structure so they have their name against it. But all the structures that they predicted have not been found experimentally. And in fact, one of the nice things we've done with some of these structures, we started a work on these structures partly to test out theoretical models of water interactions that we can then use in the computer to look at other behaviour of water interaction with other systems, particularly in chemical and biological structures. And when we sorted out the structure of one of these phases, we said, OK, we've got this structure, you guys predict what it should be. And most of them got it wrong, and one guy got it right. It was a blind prediction of something which we knew the answer to. So this is quite a nice strict test of the way people are developing their models. So I don't know what the limiting factors are. I don't think we're going to find a denser structure, because that dense structure of ice 8 is a fully packed structure. And I don't think we're going to be able to make anything which is significantly denser than that with a different structure. But in the intermediate, I don't know, there may be another structure like ice 4, which is a different kind of interpenetration.
We've got a written question here, which is another good one. Are there any temperatures and pressures where water will crystallise in a disordered state or lattice?
Yes. Well, it doesn't crystallise.
So does it not count as a crystal if it's slightly disordered?
If it's... What do you mean by slightly disordered?
you kept chucking the word regular around.
Okay. Let's go back to silica. Silica. You all know very well that you can make glass.
Yeah.
Silica, that's essentially silica in a non-crystalline frozen liquid form. Okay? If I leave it long enough, it might crystallise. Roman glass can be crystalline because it's old and it's crystallised in time. But the time it takes to crystallise that system is so slow that it won't happen in your or my lifetime. It's a tetrahedral structure like water. If I cool down water fast enough, then I can bypass the nucleation, the crystal nucleation, and I can make a non-crystalline solid structure, which we call amorphous ice. And if I look at the structure of the amorphous ice, it's essentially this four-coordinated network structure that I've shown you here. That's one form of amorphous ice. Unfortunately or fortunately, there are four different kinds of amorphous ice, depending on how you make them. There were four forms of amorphous ice, depending on where you made them. Until we looked at detailed structures, and we found that three of them were basically the same, and one of them was different. And then one of my dear Austrian colleagues rang me up one day, or sent me an email, saying, "Hey, look at this pattern. We think we've got something which is even denser than that last amorphous ice we gave you." And we looked at that, and he was right. And so we looked at those structures. And they are still basically, they're all still basically four coordinated structures, but they are denser than the lowest density water size is essentially the same as supercooled water. The others are denser. They're denser because they don't really know the intermediate range topology of these. They do depend very much on how you make them. Because they're non-equilibrium structures, what the actual stuff is depends precisely on how you make it. If I cool it very rapidly and then cool it not so rapidly, or then I slightly anneal it, then I can make some small changes to the structure. But I'm rambling a bit, but you can get amorphous solid ice structures, which are similar, if you like, first approximation to what you get in window glass or in the amorphous car. But there are other variations on the amorphous structures which are a bit more complicated. But yes, you can get them if you bypass the crystallization.
We've still got a few more questions. Let me go there first and then come back around.
I was going to ask about the boundary condition for all these various states. Look at what's going on in the liquid. They're all going to be different. So presumably, are there 12 different things that go on at the edges, assuming that you keep whatever is outside pressurising things similar? And if so, does that mean that you've essentially got another state diagram with 12 different states, and one's just looking at the bits at the edge? And does that necessarily coincide with this one? So could you get another 12 states that actually are slightly different? Because the things that are going to affect where that state changes are not necessarily the same, are they?
Sorry, are you talking about the boundary between...
Well, if you look at the edge of your lump of stuff...
Okay, if we look at the structure of the surface of the ice...
Yeah. Then presumably it's going to be different in each case. Because it's got to interact with different structure inside. Mm-hmm. So again, you've got another state diagram with 12 states.
Well, yes, but this is, the surface is not, I could argue the surface is not a thermodynamic state. And the thermodynamic state is only defined in the infinite limit. So now I may have a different local structure. But I don't see why that should mean I want to rewrite my phase diagram.
I'm not saying you should rewrite it, but is it interesting to look at it?
Yeah, it could be, yeah. But, it's good to look at these structures in the bulkhead. I'd have to try and design the surface reflection measurement on a single crystal to do that sort of work. Nearly all this work that I've shown you has been done on powders. Okay, where the powder crystal.
Sorry, can't hear.
Sorry. Most of the work we've done on this has been done not on single crystals, where you would have a significant surface there to look at, if you could actually focus on it. Most of this work has been done on powders of small crystallized, because those are much easier to prepare. And so we wouldn't have the techniques to be able to just look at the surfaces of those. And we could play around with the computer and see what those tell us, but I prefer to deal with reality. I don't know what those structures are like. I don't think we look properly experimentally at the structure of an ice surface.
It's fine.
Could I ask a slightly different question? What is the neutron source you use, and how do you produce this extreme pressure?
The neutron sources have been a mixture of a reactor source in Grenoble, the Institut Mélenchon, which came on stream in the early 70s.
Sorry, where was that?
In Grenoble.
The
other work, most of the work that I've done in the last 10, 15 years has been done at the Rutherford Lab, which is on an accelerator-based source. It's a proton accelerator which chucks high-energy protons into a tantalum target, which then produces neutrons by this spallation process. And the reason I use that largely is that, a number of reasons, the characteristics of the source are such that it is much better for working with aqueous systems than as a reactor source, particularly in terms of liquids, because there are some corrections I need to make for the liquid, which are difficult to do with the reactor source, but much easier with high-energy neutrons I get from the spallation source. So, short answer is I use the neutrons from down the road or from France. How do I get the pressure? Two ways. One is in a pressure vessel where you apply the pressure. The pressure is transmitted through a gas, which is usually helium, because it doesn't freeze. Sometimes argon, if I don't want the helium to form the helium hydrate. I can only use that up to pressures of about 7,000 atmospheres. Above that, then I have to use, a piston arrangement. with a liquid.
But is it static pressure, or is it just a moment training?
No, it's static pressure. It's static pressure. But also, quite a lot of this work initially was done on so-called recovered samples of ice. Although I need to go to these pressures to form the phase, if I then dunk that sample into liquid nitrogen, I can slow down the molecular processes in that system, in that structure, so that I can then take the pressure off and I still got the phase. And that is much easier to deal with, because I don't have the problem of this pressure vessel and having to get neutrons through that pressure vessel. Now, for neutrons, in some ways, that's not that much a problem, because neutrons are quite penetrating and lighting X-rays. I had a real problem using X-rays within a pressure vessel. Some of the very high pressure stuff, I would use I use a so-called anvil cell, which is two opposed diamond anvils just crunched together. And for the very high pressures, I need to do that. So for ice 8 I can do in the piston cylinder cell setup. Anything higher pressures than that, and there is work going on much higher pressures, then I would need to use an anvil. Some of the ice 6 work, and the more recent ice 15 work, which is related to ICE6, we've used anvils because we need those for the pressures.
We're going to make some last one on the far side, and then there'll probably be a moment to chat afterwards.
You debunked the water memory idea very nicely, 2 picoseconds, but what about long-range order? There are people who think that biological molecules find their mates, as it were, spookily fast, like during RNA processing, for instance. Would you put any credence in that?
Well, There are all sorts of other things in these systems apart from water. And so you have to look at how those other things that are in there are affecting the dynamics of the processes which are going on. If I go back 30 years, I have a model of the dynamics of water close to a biomolecule, which says that I have time scales of about a million for the second as characteristic relaxation times. If I fast forward and see how the NMR guys have developed their technique in the last 20 years or before then, you find that those timescales have actually fallen. And so the picture I have now, the dynamics of water around the biomolecule, are that the, apart from waters which might be actually stuck inside it, for example, some proteins, we've got holes in there, we've got water molecules stuck inside, and those, you know, those got long exchange times, obviously, with the outside world. But on the surface itself, we're talking only about a factor of five slowing down of those dynamic processes. So, in terms of a long-term memory, I find it difficult to match that with the data we've got on water dynamics close to surfaces.
Yes, I didn't say long-term memory. I said long-range order.
Yes.
The idea that two chemicals some distance apart might be able to be attracted towards one another over a longer range than would normally be the case because the water molecules are being ordered in some way.
It's more likely that they're attracted if the water molecules aren't ordered in some way, because if they're ordered, then you've got entropic barriers to get through to get things together. If I look at things like, you're familiar with this concept of non-freezing water on the surface?
Vaguely, yes.
Some work students of mine did many years ago now.
John, can you come back?
I'm sorry. Looked at this and found, well, you know, if I freeze this system, there's a certain amount of water which doesn't freeze, which is close to the surface here, and it's perturbed sufficiently by that surface that it can't actually find the crystalline phase, and that is limited to about three layers of water. Okay.
Skating.
I wouldn't like to skate on three layers of water. There's a whole industry which says that water is very strongly ordered, going away from these surfaces, and that is partly relevant to the way in which the solvent is operating as a biological medium.
Mm-hmm.
But the evidence that I can see, the good dynamic experiments, I don't think are actually consistent with that. But you know, it's still an argument people are having. I mean, there's a whole conference goes over in the States every year with these guys and they're actually associated with the memory aspects as well. But I always got this problem. Thermodynamics is actually quite powerful, you know, and the thermodynamic fluctuations theory is actually quite good. System mechanical bar. You know. If I've got this characteristic timescale, I'm not going to have ordering staying for a long time unless I've got a permanent template there, which can freeze this stuff out. If I look at antifreeze proteins, these are the things that, you know, fishes have, because it stops the ice, it stops the water in them turning into ice, and that's okay until they unfreeze. When you put stuff in the freezer, and sometimes it comes out as a mush, and those are supposed to act by actually preventing the penetration of ice into the surface. So I'm rambling again. I don't know. I haven't seen good solid evidence which makes me happy with those concepts. But science it moves on, and if there's good evidence, let's see it.
I'm going to wrap up fairly quickly tonight, so then if anyone does want to ask anything private, they can, or we're queuing up. So next month's cafe, first of all, the subject, Our speaker is Dr. Barbara Gavris, who is very interested in, she's a scientist who's become very interested in meditation and the concept of mindfulness and what the scientific basis for those ideas might be. So it is very much a science cafe, but a slightly more unusual discussion, I suspect. That one, for the only one this year that I would expect, we are moving to Wednesday. Please, 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 please remember this place will be cold and dark on Tuesday night, on the second Tuesday of December. It will be warm and light again on Wednesday, and you can blame Oxford admissions schedule, because otherwise I'm busy till 10 p.m. on Tuesday and I just can't do it.
So they're all here?
They're all here. The venue's not changing. Did you put out an old one, Will? Apologies. Apologies if you got an old one. They are all in here. Yeah. So the venue is straightforward. It's here from now on. This is our main home. Same times, same venue, same setup, same ideas, just on Wednesday for only December. Then we're back again in January. And January will be on a very unusual but very, very effective way of dealing with dementia. Not in scientific cure terms, but in terms of managing the disease and its impact on families. Which is fascinating. It's quite a kind of strongly scientific approach, but not one in pitched as that, so it'll be much more public access one. And you can see on the flyers we've got on the table around behind what's coming up in February and March as well. That's all the stuff that's coming up, and we're going to clear up now. Please do feel free to stay and chat for a bit. We do not need help clearing up. We've got lots of helpers, it's great, and they're kind of well trained, so we'll just let them carry on and keep doing it. But can we give a please big round of applause to John?